to like ease up on the heavy sigh.
I was just gonna say that was like a Kai sigh. It was so appropriate to starting the show.
I'm channeling his spirit.
You really are. Oh my goodness. Hello, everyone.
We have the same
Hello
sense
there.
Of despair at the world.
I guess so. I'm Molly Wood. That she with the big Kai sigh is Kimberly Adams. We're back with the Make Me Smart Daily Edition, trying to make today make sense. You can tell from
right,
the sigh that
today.
It's going to be an uphill battle today.
You know what? Let me reset my sigh. There, that's an optimistic sigh for you.
It is. I like
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you know, so today on the show, go ahead.
Right, totally. A bunch of downers. No. Today actually is What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, which is fast becoming one of my favorites because your questions are so interesting and we get to kind of like bounce all over topic wise and hopefully give you some good information. I was going to say that I actually between this last week, I did an interview with Robert Reich, the economist for the Commonwealth Club, and then talking with George Packer yesterday. I have to say that both of them have a sort of a similar message, which is like, listen, in times of, well, I mean, they're both talking about the same thing, which is wealth inequality and the damage that that can cause. But they both have a similar message, which is kind of like the power of the people is what can overcome. And I strangely find that kind of hopeful. So I've decided to try to exactly. Because, I mean, I think we're at a time when like... our divisiveness is causing us to not have that much faith in each other. And if you spend all day on Twitter like we do, you mostly just see people sniping at each other. And even if you kind of agree, someone still tweets you back and is like, no. Which, dear everyone, like you got to stop doing that. You cannot start your tweet with no. Even if you're my homie and you agree with me, if you're like, no, and then whatever your point is, it's not gonna come off right. But anyway, I'm on a new unity kick. I'm on a new coalition kick.
I don't know. I'm always very fascinated by those tweets where people like go out of their way to tell you how awful you are or how wrong you are about things. I'm just like, what else is going on in your life? You're probably manifesting anger at me.
Like sometimes
you're probably
they're not
just
even
projecting.
And that too. Yeah, exactly. I know. Well, and that's actually just like it. I always think of Sarah Silverman. Is that right? The comedian. There was a guy who was really harassing her online, I think maybe on Instagram. And one day she just wrote back to him and she was like, hey, you seem really upset. Like, are you all right? And it led to he was like, no, I'm not. I hurt my back and I've been like, you know, really isolated in my house. I mean, this was a while ago. And he just, you know, he was like, I'm just going through a really hard time and I have all this anger and rage and frustration. And you know, I'm like, I lost my health insurance and I'm going to lose my house and I'm taking it out on you. That's happening. And she was like, oh, buddy, I'm here for you. And she like launched a whole fundraising campaign to help him get medical treatment for his back and keep his house.
Yes. Not to say that people's like legitimate concerns about like the framing of arguments or the debate, good, robust, all of those things, but just like no need to be mean about it.
I know. Also, even if you're being nice, again, I'm just going to say this again to you, my friends on Twitter. No, is not an opener. All right. Should we get to your question?
Here's a yes. Here's a yes.
Here's a yes.
Yes, we're going to answer these questions. One of the big stories this week is the continuing fight over TikTok and whether it should be allowed to operate in the U.S. At one point, it seemed like the president was going to ban TikTok and, you know, all of the TikTokers of the world united in anger. And then now Microsoft is in talks to buy the company. One of the main controversies here seems to be who will own the data they collect and with whom they shall share it. John F. from Dayton, Ohio, wrote in to say, how exactly is Chinese data collection more problematic than data collection by U.S. tech giants or by the American government? Or is this just a data collection arms race? Molly, I'm going to leave this one to you.
Yeah, I mean, this is it's been really interesting to watch. Privacy advocates have been up in arms about TikTok, in addition, of course, to the U.S. government saying it presents a national security risk. And that has caused certainly some people to be like, if you compare this data collection to Google or Facebook or Instagram, really? The fear around TikTok, you know, potentially secretly gathering data and then sharing it with the Chinese government, which, to be clear, TikTok has denied. They have said, we do not do that. That TikTok operates as a separate company inside the United States. There is not a TikTok in China. But the assumption is that, you know, if you're Chinese owned, you're sharing data back and forth. And the danger really comes down to the threat matrix of the people that you're talking about. So it is not necessarily a problem if the Chinese data collection, if the Chinese government has data on some random people. But what it potentially allows for is the Chinese government to profile and track certain people. And if those people are dissidents or members of the military or have, you know, work at companies that might have trade secrets that those companies would want to protect, then that is where you potentially have a national security concern. And we actually talked not that long ago on the show about Strava, the fitness tracking app.
Running app.
Yeah, exactly. Running and biking, and how hackers were basically able to use it to determine the location of secret military bases because members of the military were using it to track their runs and their bike rides. And so the question is, like, how much data? I mean, it's actually an interesting question of how much data gets collected and how sensitive it really is, because everybody uses these apps and very few people think about it. So that's the very specific concern about Chinese data collection.
Well, and also
next.
Not just the in.
No.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. No. When you paused, I thought you were like, okay.
Well, no, one of the things that I read, and, you know, because, again, Washington and sort of the defense community tweeting those that do, it's not just the individuals who they worry about the national security threat. If, you know, a government official or member of the military or a diplomat, you know, is using one of these things, but also, like, if one of their kids is, and they find out that this person, you know, this is their child, that can be another risk potentially. But yes, I will move on, because, as you know, TikTok, social media, cool kid things are not my forte.
Oh, come on. No, I mean, this story is fascinating.
I mean, I don't have a Facebook account, so.
No, that's true. My son and I had to try out Reel today, which is like Facebook literally today. They had announced and launched it earlier, and they had tried to make a TikTok clone before as a standalone app called Lasso, but then today also launched this feature called Reels inside Instagram, which is basically a total TikTok ripoff. And it was like, man, You got some good timing there, friends. Our next question is on another topic we've been interested in since the beginning of the pandemic. That question is supply chains and what is on the shelves in grocery stores. Lauren Dillard from Philadelphia wrote in to say, early on, when news of the pandemic broke in the U.S., we felt minor supply shocks as consumers scooped up toilet paper and chicken breasts. So why is there still stuff to buy? Will we see supply interruptions in another year when current inventories dry up, or has demand dried up nearly as much as supply?
Well, I think there was some stockpiling. So a lot of people bought enough toilet paper to last them a year. So when there finally was toilet paper in the system, nobody needed to buy it because, again, toilet paper for a year, unnecessarily so. The other thing is that the supply chain adjusted. We covered this quite a bit on Marketplace and in other areas that, like, it wasn't that there was no toilet paper. It was like toilet paper for office buildings, not toilet paper for your house. And they had to readjust that supply chain. Takes a little bit of time. Chicken breasts packaged for restaurants versus packaged for, you know, your house or in your home consumption. And it just had to adjust. So it did adjust. The stuff is available, but there was a cost to that, and it did cause a lot of problems in the system. There's a story in the Washington Post about how grocery prices in nearly every category have gone up. Beef and veal, I'm looking at the notes here, saw the steepest spike, up 20%, followed by eggs at 10%, poultry up 8.6%, and pork up 8.5%. And not only, aw, puppy.
Yeah, sorry. Hello, hello everyone. That's the okay. Dogs are here.
And not only are things getting more expensive, but people have less money to spend on said things, especially with that $600 a week and extra unemployment insurance benefit running out. The way that I kind of keep track of this, and this is something you can do in your own grocery store, is to look at the bottom shelf in the grocery store, because a lot of times the lower cost items and the bulk items that have, you know, the just tend to be a little bit lower cost are at the bottom shelves of grocery stores. And every time I go to the store, those shelves are the ones that are like consistently empty. That's where you're finding like the ramen noodles and the bags of cereal and the larger bags of like the grocery store branded rice and things like that. And I've noticed it. And people are hungry.
I mean, no, that's absolutely true. And so, yes, the question of supply chain is not resolved, even if the shortages don't seem as obvious right now.
Yeah. And then I say people are hungry because there has just been this drastic spike, as we've reported and others, in people seeking help from food banks and applying
They're literally
for SNAP
hungry.
Benefits. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And our One Edison of the, poll, what was it, 44%? 44% of Americans who responded to our Edison Marketplace survey, economic anxiety survey, said that they were concerned about buying food, being able to afford food. That was appalling.
One of the more interesting elements of the CARES Act is that it allowed for an expansion of a pilot program that allowed people to use delivery services for groceries. So you could, you know, buy your groceries online from like Amazon or something like that. So people in food deserts have a little bit more access, and they're expanding that program. But one of the downsides is that now that some of those provisions are expiring, some people are going to have to reapply, because the CARES Act also lifted some restrictions and made it easier for people to apply for food assistance. And now we're in the situation where a whole bunch of people are going to have to reapply just as the $600 is running out. So it's going to be a moment.
Yeah,
I really hope the next question's happier. Let's look.
Yeah, keep it rolling. Keep it rolling.
Next up, listener Carl Galco, who wants to follow up on something we talked about on the show at the beginning of the pandemic. Carl asks, what happened to the quick rollout of contact tracing apps by all the major tech players? Seems like in April and May, they were all willing to work together to get us these apps to help trace and prevent the spread of COVID-19. I hope their fears of public breakup or regulation didn't hinder the implementation of something that could have saved lives and our economy in the past several months. Molly, what happened?
A couple things happened. One is that a number of states did not want to use these apps. I think only about 20%, according to Google, 20 states, according to Google, were actually interested in using this technology. I think there were real concerns about whether it was going to be effective, but the main thing was privacy concerns by consumers. And if you roll out an app like this and you don't get massive uptake, like a lot of people, at least 60% of a country's population, according to Business Insider, using it, it just won't be effective. So it doesn't mean that this technology is dead on arrival or that it can't be useful. But I think at a time when you have a fair amount of the country still arguing about how real the virus itself is, that we're still like 10 steps away from adopting the idea of digital contact tracing, which seems astonishing. I know.
Yeah, I was feeling a little wistful when one of our engineers, Robin, was posting in Slack, and I know you saw this also, screenshots of the Canadian contact tracing app, and like,
yep,
how clearly it was explained and how they addressed the privacy issues. And I was like, wow, must be nice when
and
people
I,
have their
know,
stuff
I
together.
Mean, yep. And the apps that Google and Apple eventually did produce have pretty good privacy protection built in, we think. In a weird way, it makes them less effective and less useful. But it also is a matter of, and we just simply have not invested in any kind of widespread contact tracing ecosystem because we still don't have a coordinated response to the virus.
I really want to get to this last question, though.
In the interest of time,
we're almost
you do?
Out of time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yep. Let's do it. Go, go, go.
Yeah. So the last time that I was on a Tuesday, we talked about the Supreme Court decision to declare nearly half of the land in Oklahoma as Indian territory, which is so fascinating and has so many repercussions. Listener Charlie Nelson wants to know, what does the recent SCOTUS decision regarding the American Indian territory mean for things like pipelines? And I know you were sad to not be here for that conversation.
I was totally. No, this is it. I mean, the shortest answer is it's a big deal. The longer answers have to do with, you know, you are right to ask this question, that this is a big deal for oil producers. It sounds like the minimum that we can expect is two layers of taxation, according to the Washington Post, one from the state and another from the tribes. And it potentially only adds to, I mean, you know, look, the oil and gas industry is essentially federally subsidized in a lot of different ways. And the cost efficiencies that have been allowed this industry will definitely be reduced if you have tribes able to say, finally, you know, A, we're going to enforce environmental rules and regulations on our sovereign land, and B, we're going to tax you accordingly in addition to U.S. taxes.
And it's interesting, at the beginning, like right when the decision came out, there was like all of this, a lot of the public statements were like, oh, the tribes in Oklahoma were working great together. We have this long history of, you know, managing these things and it's all going to be fine. And that really quickly kind of fizzled. And they're just like, actually, no, it's going to take some time to work this stuff out. And, yeah. I've been following it with great interest. And I think, you know, we all should. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Thanks
this,
for the question,
and this
Charlie.
Aspect, I know. This aspect could lead to a ton of stories. I love it. We're not letting you go without a Make Me Smile question because this one is amazing.
I'm going to see if I can say this. Okay. So, Molly, your Make Me Smile on Monday was about alpacas.
Nice.
Said it. And you said you want to get one. And some people on the Make Me Smart team were wondering, how does one procure an alpaca? Well, listener James yep. Womack wrote in to say that, first of all, you can't have just one. You need to have at least three because they're herd animals and they don't want to be lonely. So you have to have three. And he sent us to a website called alpacaseller.com where the animals are anywhere from like $500 for an older male all the way up to $8,000 for a pregnant female, mostly in the $1,200 range. Oddly enough, just the amount of the stimulus check. They generally need 1 acre for every five animals. You need to feed them grass, hay, or grain once or twice a day. And you should schedule some stress-free leisure time each day just to enjoy them.
Yeah, I should. Several people wrote to us. This is what I love about this show is that several people wrote in to say like, oh, I know all about alpacas, which is awesome because somewhere out there is a listener who knows everything about what we need to know about. And everybody was like, they're really social.
Hence,
but I'm just saying, couldn't their herd be a dog? Two dogs and a boy and a lady?
But do they hug
you
the
tell
way the
us.
Alpacas do? Antlers all an ugly.
You tell us.
Yeah,
you tell us,
listeners,
because
amazing.
You do indeed. I know exactly. The names on the website are like Scheherazade, world class BB, <Just so cute. laughs>
Apollo of the Alahenies.
Oh my goodness!
All right, we gotta go. We're so
over summer dreams. Yeah, we do gotta go. That is it for our daily show, where we do whatever we want when Kai's not here to be all radio. In the meantime, send your questions and your comments to makemesmart@marketplace.org. We will be back tomorrow with Hollowed Out Shell Thursday.
Wow. Okay. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Sam Anderson. Our digital producer is Tony Wagner. Ben Heathcote is our video producer, and Ethan Peretz is our video intern. And thanks to writer-producer Erica Phillips.
Today's program was engineered by Drew Jostad. Our theme music was composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez. And the executive director of On Demand and senior producer this week, who didn't even yell at us about time, I'm just saying, is Sitaran Yipes.
She's sufficiently distanced from the radio stuff since she's all on demand now.
She's in podcast world. It's fine. The old
there
Erica
is no
Phillips
time
starts.
In
the
podcasting.
Old alpaca dog herd. I'm sure it's a thing. The very dogs.
I mean, if you make it a
special.
Thing, it becomes a thing. But would the alpaca really? Be happy?
That one lives in that apartment in Australia. Don't ruin this for me.
Sorry.
I mean, do ruin this for me. That is not a good idea.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.